Today is October 5th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. And we're actually in the process of getting a new phone number. So for this week at least, you can't call us, but do send a note. How's that?
I think that's fantastic.
So I'm having a feeling that we're going to do a special thing this week, or at least a special thing for us. We have a guest, Chris Breen.
Yes.
He's going to be joining us for the Context Machine to talk about a little brouhaha that he's in the center of. And I have a feeling that he's our interview with him is going to go on a little long.
You know, this is one place where my crystal ball that's usually broken, I think, is going to be right on when I say, yes, you were right. We're going to run a little bit long.
And that's because, of course, we already recorded that segment.
Well, yeah, that's how my crystal ball works.
Yeah, exactly. It's how mine works, too.
Yeah.
So this may be a little bit of a long show, folks, but we're going to cut the rest of the Context Machine short, and because we think we have a really good conversation with Chris about a lot of the issues that he raised. And with that, let's go ahead and jump into the news.
Apple is under the gun for its update tactics. The iPhone may be delayed in France. Verizon thinks it has an iPhone killer. The iPod Touch is expected to be a holiday hit. Time Warner wants to take on the iTunes Store. Microsoft set Bungie free. And the iPhone lawsuit train keeps rolling on.
Apple, along with its iPhone 1.1.1 update, has drawn lots of criticism from breaking third-party applications and breaking unlocked phones. TMO's own Ted Landau called the update, quote, a sad day for Apple users, unquote. He went on to say, again, quoting, with iPhone software update 1.1.1, Apple has accomplished two goals that run counter to any positive view of what supposedly makes Apple different from other corporations. First, it has stomped on one of the most enthusiastically supported and creative aspects of owning an iPhone. There are literally dozens of websites out there devoted to iPhone hacking. The grassroots support is what Apple should be encouraging, not destroying. Second, it has released an update that potentially permanently disables your iPhone when you attempt to install it with no advice on how to prevent or fix this. This has to be some kind of first, an officially supported update whose major consequence may be that it destroys the very device it is supposed to update, unquote.
And Macworld's Chris Breen took a similar view. He observed that even though Apple is the darling of Wall Street right now, that could change if Apple follows a path of corporate arrogance. He said, quote, regardless of what Apple does in the real world, release hardware, offer up the finest operating system computer dumb has seen, make incredible content deals, if it returns to the days of the arrogant Apple, it's going to lose its darling status in a hurry. And this is the path I fear Apple has returned to, end quote.
France Telecom CEO Didier Lambon said in September that his company, Orange, would offer the iPhone in France before Christmas. Now it appears that it won't happen since Apple and Orange are still negotiating over terms of the deal. The two companies have been trying to work out details over exclusive distribution rights while trying to work within French law or de l'ordre français, that requires consumers to have the option of buying cell phones without a contract. Both companies have also been arguing over Apple's demand for up to 30% of iPhone-related voice and data revenues. One source at Orange commented, quote, the risk we're evaluating this week is that Apple crosses France off, unquote.
And Microsoft hoped its original Zune Media Player would knock Apple's iPod for a loop, and now it's ready to try again in November. The Redmond-based company announced on Tuesday that it plans to roll out a new Zune product lineup next month. The new Zune will be available in an 80-gigabyte hard drive-based model and a smaller 4-gigabyte and 8-gigabyte flash-based model. All will continue to include Wi-Fi support and now will also support wireless syncing with Windows-based computers. Microsoft will also launch launch an updated version of its Zune Marketplace designed to compete with the iTunes Store. The new online media store will sport a redesigned interface that Microsoft called, quote, fun and easy. But most notably, will offer about 1 million DRM-free tracks in MP3 format. Big Redmond is pricing the new Zunes to closely match Apple's iPod lineup. The 80-gigabyte Zune is priced at $249.99 US. The 4-gigabyte model costs $149.99, and the 8-gigabyte model is $199.99. All are within 99 cents of their iPod counterparts.
Verizon is on the prowl with a so-called iPhone killer. The company unveiled its Voyager cell phone on Wednesday and is designed to compete head-to-head with Apple's iPhone. Verizon Chief Marketing Officer Mike Landman is so sure that Voyager will trump Apple's offering that he dubbed it an iPhone killer, but he wasn't done. He also said, quote, "We think it'll be the best phone this year. It will kill the iPhone," thus earning him the first Chucklehead Award for making a ridiculous statement for this week in this week's podcast. The Voyager sports some features that are similar to the iPhone, including a touch-sensitive interface, a web browser, and a 2-megapixel digital camera. It also includes a traditional fold-out cell phone keyboard, a feature that Verizon is sure will help trump the iPhone. Pricing hasn't been set yet, but the Voyager is expected to sell for about $400 in line with the iPhone. And considering the fact that it actually has a label letting you know that the icons below it are the shortcut menu, I'm sure it'll do well.
Oh, how can it possibly go wrong?
How can it go wrong?
Okay. Apple's iPod Touch, the little brother to the iPhone, is expected to be a top seller this holiday season, according to Toys R Us. The company's annual holiday bestseller list for 2007 ranks the iPod Touch as the most popular electronic gadget, pushing the iPod Nano out of the number one position. Also topping the list of popular gifts are toys based on the Transformers franchise.
More than meets the eye. Time Warner Indeed. Is hoping to score in the music download market and will be launching its own iTunes competitor. Having determined at great expense, no doubt, that what the marketplace is really clamoring for is yet another music subscription service that isn't compatible with the iPod, the company announced the Roadrunner Music Subscription Service. The service will offer more than 3 million. You know, we can't make this stuff up. Try as we might, the service will offer more than 3 million songs from EMI Group, Sony BMG Music Entertainment, Universal Music Group, and Warner Music Group, as well as independent labels. Roadrunner Music subscriptions will cost $9.95 a month for music, ad-free radio, and music videos. For $13.95 a month, subscribers can copy their downloads to a portable media player. But since the service will include copy protection, it is likely it will be compatible with Windows-only devices, and it won't include iPod support. Genius.
Indeed. And in the computer gaming world, Bungie Studios announced on Friday that it has entered into an agreement with Microsoft to go it alone as its own company, just like the old days. Microsoft will retain a minority equity interest in the game maker, but Bungie will be free to develop for any platform it chooses. Bungie is best known for developing the Halo series, but was first known for its Mac-only Marathon first-person shooter games, and I have very fond memories of those.
Oh, yeah.
Microsoft purchased the company after Halo for the Mac had already been announced, and then redirected Bungie's development efforts into the Xbox gaming console. Both companies will continue to work together on future additions to the Halo franchise.
And I appreciate you giving me this next item because...
I gave this one to you on purpose.
Oh, you're the best. Wrapping up this week's news, Apple is facing yet another lawsuit over the iPhone, but this time it's over the price cut that the company sprang on customers in early September. Dongmei Li, a New York woman that's hopping mad about the $200 price reduction, filed a suit against Apple and AT&T on September 24th, alleging price discrimination. In addition to claiming that Apple violated New York price discrimination laws, the suit also alleged that early buyers were given less favorable purchase terms and that the price reduction injured early purchasers because now, and again, we're not making this up, because now they can't resell their iPhones for the same profit. They can't Okay. Miss Lee bought her 4-gig iPhone when Apple originally released the combination iPod and smartphone at the end of June. And yes, she gets our second Chucklehead Award of the week.
That's a double Chucklehead Award.
It is indeed. All right, let's move on to the context machine. Well, that sound means it's time for the context machine. And, Jeff, let's do something a little different this week.
I think that sounds like a fantastic idea.
Especially since we already have him on the line. It'd be kind of rude to change it now.
You know, actually, I think we should be honest. It's not so much he's on the line. It's that we drove past his house with an unmarked van, kidnapped him, wrapped him up with duct tape.
Shh, dude, you're not supposed to say that.
I mean, nothing.
Well, anyway, on the line we have with us today Chris Breen, who has been the subject of all sorts of discussion in the news for his piece mentioned up in the news about whether or not Apple's on the wrong path.
Right, yeah.
So, welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Chris Breen is a longtime Mac columnist, for those few who might not possibly know. What is your official job right now with Mac Publishing?
I am now senior editor with Mac Publishing.
You were senior? Wow. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Well, it's just because of the color of my hair.
Right, which makes sense. And those of you might also know that Chris is also the keyboardist for the Macworld All-Star Band, the once-a-year band that plays at Macworld.
And that's an awesome band.
It is an awesome band, isn't it? Full disclosure, I'm in the band too, so that was just some artificial pimping. Well, why don't you tell us what your column was about, Chris? Let's get it from you in your own words.
Okay. The title of the column was, Is Apple on the Wrong Path? And it was kind of a general observation of some things that I've observed lately happening with Apple that hints that perhaps Apple is, I characterize Apple as it's a very self-assured company. It really believes in what it's doing, and it believes it's right about what it's doing. And I was wondering if perhaps this attitude had gotten a little bit out of control, that they were doing things now that they believed were right, but were not necessarily great for their customers, or were not as good as they might have been for their customers. So I took an example of six or seven different things that have happened recently, some big, some small, and just said, to me, this points to a pattern that maybe we've seen in the past where Apple has come down and made certain decisions. For example, the round mouse that was roundly criticized, yet Apple stuck with it for years, apparently for no other reason other than that they thought they were right in the first place, and by God, that was going to be the mouse we had, even though a lot of people didn't like it and found that it was ergonomically uncomfortable. So that's generally the gist of the piece. Some areas of the piece have garnered more attention than others, and in general, the reaction has been to focus on those areas rather than on the main message of the piece, which again is Apple doing the right thing by its customers, or is it getting a little bit out of hand? And my question was, well, is it?
Well, now, Mr. Breen, now you just hold on right there. Let's talk about this. Really, you're just trying to jump on the bandwagon with all those bitching about that 1.1.1.1 update thingy, aren't you?
Yeah, you must have read my email, because that's what everybody's reacting to. I mean, there are a couple of things that, well, I'll tell you, the things that I commented on, the first is the iPhone's recessed headphone jack, which is a small thing, but again, it sort of shows that, and for those that don't know, the iPhone has a recessed headphone jack, so you can't use a third-party headphone with it without an adapter. And a lot of people who were sort of backing up Apple on this said, oh, well, it's because they were trying to shore up the integrity of the port so it wouldn't break. Well, it turns out Greg Joswiak from Apple said, no, that's not the case at all. The case is that we liked the way it looked. So Apple didn't include an adapter, so you have to go out and buy one. I then knocked the new keyboard, which I find to be uncomfortable. The flat keys are great for a laptop. However, you tend, if you're a touch typist, to lose the home row because there's no indentations in the key and the throw isn't very much. A lot of people came back and said, no, we really like the new keyboard. So I've backed off on that one. If you like it, good for you. The video out on new iPods does not work unless the accessory you're using has a special Apple authorization chip, which means your old video accessories are now obsolete and they will never become obsolete. They will remain obsolete because they this is a hardware upgrade. I have cited iMovie 08, where a lot of people who are accustomed to a traditional video editor felt like the new iMovie left out a lot of features that the old one had and kind of dumbed down the program. A couple of things about Leopard's interface elements that people have found wacky, and these are publicly available interface elements. The whole ringtones issue, and then finally bricking the phone. And bricking the phone was the one that got all the attention because it's in recent memory, and it's a huge deal. So people generally thought, you're just making all this other stuff up in order to talk about the bricking of the phone, and that's not the case. I could have done an article on just bricking the phone, but I wanted to look at the bigger picture about what does bricking the phone sort of hint to us about the way Apple views the world and its customers.
Well, you know, that's what attracted us to the piece to begin with, was the fact that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, pro and con, about the 1.1.1 update, breaking the phones and disabling the hacks. Our own Ted Lendell wrote a great column about the hacking issue. And you weren't talking about just that. You're actually looking at this bigger trend, and that's why we wanted to have you on the show, too, is because the overarching issue of whether or not Apple is starting to become a bit arrogant, and I'm going to throw in again into that. I think it is a topic that pertains to all of us who use the platform, even, and certainly as shareholders, those of us who are shareholders, it's certainly an issue to discuss.
You know, another important thing is to point out that Chris actually stood up and started talking about issues that a lot of other people have been harboring in the back of their minds, but hadn't really put together in the eloquent way that Chris can. So thanks for doing that. Even though so many people are focusing on one small bit of that entire article, thank you for doing that.
Oh, well, I'm just doing my job. No, and I have to say, I do not blame people at all about focusing on the bricking issue, because I have very strong feelings about it. I express those in the article. And other people have just as strong feelings. And also, Apple is a very emotional issue. And I said that right at the front of the article, that, you know, if we were talking about Joe's plumbing supplies or something, nobody would care. But people have a very emotional attachment to Apple, you know, so it's very hard to find people that fall in the middle.
Let's be honest, it's why we have jobs.
Well, it is why we have jobs.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
It's why the three of us have jobs. Be that as it may, though, let's talk about the reaction that you've gotten from readers. Certainly everyone has said, boy, Chris, you've raised some very interesting issues. And when you look at the big picture like that, maybe it is an issue that should be of concern to those of us who follow Apple. And thanks for raising those points. Right. That's what everyone said.
Not everyone said that. There were a few that said that. But it's sort of funny that, because I've sort of crossed into the area being the Apple basher. I mean, in the past, people said, oh, you're an Apple fanboy, and so we don't have to listen to you. And now I'm an Apple basher, and so they don't have to listen to me.
But, well, I think all three of us have been accused of being either an Apple fanboy, an Apple basher, or, you know, pro and con piracy, pro and con record labels, and you name it. So we certainly understand that.
Well, and you know, with the industry we're in, I think it just kind of goes along with the job, because people are so passionate about Apple products and the periphery of products that are all around Apple. So, yeah, it's just one of those things that we end up having to deal with. People are going to be mad with us for the positive things we say and mad with us for the negative things we say as well.
No, and I think it's perfectly fair. I mean, I dish it out. I am critical. I was critical of Apple in this. I have been critical of other companies and other things people have done as well. So it's perfectly fair for people to come back and be critical of what I've said and to disagree with me vehemently. But it is sort of an interesting litmus test on the reaction to this, because there are those on the side who, and again, we tend to focus largely on the bricking, who say it's perfectly fair to brick the phone, and you're an idiot, you know, if you disagree.
An irrational position to take, in my opinion, but go ahead.
Wasn't mine as well, but, and you know, and those that didn't just scream at me at the outset, who I could carry on a conversation with or exchange messages in our forums, they had some very good reasons for believing this was the case, that, you know, Apple warned you, that you bought the thing locked, that you know, there was no guarantee this was going to work, and you're kind of on your own because you had violated Apple's terms of service as well as AT&T's. Those are reasonable arguments. I don't happen to agree with them, but they were well stated and they're reasonable. On the other hand, there were the people who agreed with me, and I received so many laundry lists of people's complaints about Apple from the last 20 years that it was sort of, no, I don't hate Apple, really, and I can't jump on your bandwagon either because I'm not out to get Apple. I'm just looking at a series of events that I think hint at a certain trend, and I think it's worth examining, and that's pretty much it.
Well, so then let's get into that. Let's actually examine that issue. What difference does it make if Apple is becoming an arrogant company again?
Oh, I don't know that it matters, you know, for the... Well, no, I think it does matter, and I'll tell you why, and this is what I said up front. I think Apple is right now Wall Street's darling. I think you look at the stock price, you look at finally the mainstream press is kind of getting Apple, but Apple is almost the, well, not, I won't say the Britney Spears, but whoever is the hot, cool thing right now, that's Apple, right? You see lots and lots of positive stories because of the iPhone, because of the iPod, of all the things that Apple's doing, and the fact that Vista is kind of bad. And, you know, Apple isn't that good. They're very, very good. And when their stock price was way down, they were not that bad either. I mean, they're somewhere in the middle, and they're closer to the top than they are to the bottom. But I kind of fear that sometimes Apple is its own worst enemy, that it does this wonderful stuff, and then it kind of takes that next step where it's like treading on its users or being perceived as arrogant. And it, you know, there are a lot of people out in the world who hate Apple and are just waiting for them to make a mistake. And I fear that they're going to make their own mistake by just going too far, being too arrogant, and at which point everybody says, oh, well, forget it. And now they really are the Britney Spears of technology, and everybody's dumping on them. And I suppose I'm helping in a way, but I'm sort of like the Apple fan out there who says, no, really, could you just step back a little bit, because I think you're getting a little close to the line, and please don't, because I really like what you do, and I don't want you guys to screw this up.
Well, you know, I think, Chris, you know, it of course would be very easy for us in the media to think more highly of ourselves than perhaps we should. But the reality is that the community, Apple's community, is a big part of Apple's success. And you know, one can't simply ignore that. And I do think that as columnists, as pundits, that it is important to actually go ahead and raise our voice when we see things that one should be concerned about. And I think that your issues here are very, 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 very apropos. It's probably not the best word for that, but it's a very good topic to discuss. In part because I agree with you. I think that Apple is making some mistakes, and I think that those mistakes may in fact be coming because until recently Apple could do no wrong. Jeff, you were going to say something?
Actually, I was. I was going to comment that I wonder how much of the brouhaha that surrounds Apple and its products relates to the customer base actually holding Apple to a higher standard than they hold other companies.
Well, I think that they do, Jeff, but at the same time, it's because Apple performs at a higher standard than other companies. I mean, you know, Chris said it, Apple's its own worst enemy. And I think that that's in part because nobody else can actually beat Apple when Apple is on its game. You know, no one has made an iPod competitor that can actually perform as well as the iPod. It might have more features. It might have more features, but it's not. It doesn't look as good. It doesn't work as easily. The interface issue. No, Apple has laid all this stuff out, and no one can touch it. Same thing with the music stores. Same thing with operating systems. On and on and on. Apple does everything that it does better than everybody else out there.
You know, and that turns out to be a double-edged sword, because what I see as the main piece that lets Apple have that better than everyone else product is the fact that they control everything so tightly. And because they control everything so tightly, it does at some point become easy to step a little bit too far and say, maybe release an update that bricks a product.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, because I do think that, you know, you're right. Control is a double-edged sword here, because they do control everything, and that's why things work so well together. But it's when they take that extra step and say, no, we're going to control this too, that's when you kind of go, oh, gosh, that was more than I wanted. You know, I don't want you to force me to buy new video accessories, because I know it's good for your business to make me buy new ones. I would have preferred.
Yeah, that's a very Microsoft thing to do, this issue with the chip.
I hate to invoke Microsoft, because that really gets people going through the roof. But it's for those that don't know, the background is this, that there's something called the Made for iPod program. And the idea ostensibly is that if you have something that's made for the iPod, your company, you vet it through Apple, and Apple says, we will make sure it works for the iPod. Great. So that's what the public knows. What's going on behind the scenes is that Apple then says, okay, if you want to be part of the Made for iPod program vendor, you must pay us a certain amount of money. If you want to use the dock connector, you must pay us an additional amount of money, plus you must give us a percentage of your sales on every item that contains that dock. Now comes along this video chip. It's a video authorization chip, and we don't know for sure, but one presumes that there is yet an additional fee for having this chip in your device. So where does that happen? Well, it's great that Apple can vet this stuff. However, that cost of that program is going into the items that you buy, so the consumer gets passed along that cost. And Apple can then... they can basically say, well, this is good for our business, and we're sorry, but you're no longer able to use this because we need more money. And again, that get passed along to the consumer as well. So when Apple makes these kind of changes, we end up paying for them. And the question is, were they necessary changes or not? As far as the Apple authorization chip, we don't know. We don't know what else is in the guts of this thing that this is going to give us. It may give us better video. Okay, maybe that's worthwhile. But it would be nice if those new iPods had some kind of backward compatibility so they would continue to work with those old pieces of hardware.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think we can. There's another issue I think that illustrates as well, and that's just the notion of the one button mouse. Or look at the buttonless mouse that Apple's been shipping since they got rid of the hockey puck. You can look at various things that Apple has done, and it often comes down to my joking mantra of think differently, Steve's way.
And, yeah.
You know, it's the there is a good side and a bad side to the control, as we've already discussed. And I think that I agree very much with Chris that when that control is taken to that extra step, it becomes a negative thing and not a positive thing. I think that trying to stop people from hacking the iPhone is a bad thing. It's bad for the platform. It's bad for the users. I think it's bad for Apple. I think that bricking these phones, putting an update that they knew could brick phones that had been unlocked, I think that is bad for Apple. As a shareholder, and that's a little bit of full disclosure there, as a shareholder, I am outraged that they would do this. I'm outraged that they would actually... do something that could A, harm their own image, and B, stop some additional sales, because the fact is that Apple does make a profit on the hardware when it sells an iPhone. You know, so you look at all these things, and there is a fine balance. I'm not wanting Apple to license, to try to take on the Microsoft model. I like the fact that my Mac works. I like the fact that my iPhone works. But there's a fine line, and I think that Apple is beginning to tread over that line a little bit too often.
You know, I have to wonder, and keep in mind, I'm not a programmer, so if there's a programmer listening that can fill me in, excellent. But until then, I have to wonder, how difficult would it have been for Apple to add in a little bit of code that checked what firmware was installed on the iPhone and said, ooh, geez, this is not what I'm expecting to see. I'm going to throw up a warning and ask the user if they really want to continue. How tough would that have been?
Yeah, I've had this discussion with any number of people because I raised that very point in the article, that wasn't there some way that somebody could have checked this, and I will tell you the rebuttals to that argument. The first is people say, well, yes, but there are many hacks out there. Well, no, there really weren't. There were a few, you know, three or four. So it would have been possible at least to identify these are the kind of hacks we have. And the Apple campus is just full of phones. Everybody there has one. So it would have been possible to get unlocked phones.
And I know for a fact that some of those phones are hacked.
Sure. because they're like us. They like their phones, but they want to do some stuff with them. Yeah. So then the question is, did they bother to check hacked phones? And the people who oppose that say, no, it was not Apple's responsibility to do this. And I would take issue with that. And I would say, this is a huge deal. You know, we're not talking about a super drive that was hacked to work with a new copy of Leopard or something. This is the most popular toy made this year. It's cross-platform. Everybody followed this in the press when it was being unlocked. So for Apple to then put its head in the sand and say, well, we're not going to test that because it's not our job to do that, is ludicrous. So I assume they did test it. And if they did test it and they found that it bricked phones, they issued a warning. Now, they did. They issued a warning and it said it could. I would have been happier if they said it will. It absolutely will destroy your phone if this happens because, you know, part of this game is intimidation. It would be nice to know for sure that it did. And then follow up. And I know Apple's not keen on doing this, but just a tiny explanation. Not why they did it, but just say, we're going to have to update the firmware on the modem and on the phone, and we need to do it for this reason, and this will kill the phone because this firmware is incompatible. They're done. And some people feel that's too much information to give the customer, but on the other hand, it avoids a huge PR problem.
Yeah, I've got an even smoother solution.
All right.
You cannot update your phone because you have done this or that. So like, for instance, for those who had hacked their phones, you must restore your phone before you can apply the firmware update. For those who had unlocked your phone, you have unlocked your phone, and Apple is no longer supporting your device.
Yeah, and ideally that's what happens in the installer. So, again, this is the argument when you say, well, there's no way the installer could know. Okay, I don't know. Yeah, that's what I think too. I think
it's
not
just not true.
True.
I've hacked my phone enough, and I'm not some expert iPhone hacker, but I've done enough to it to know that that iTunes was very well aware of the fact that there was different software than it expected.
Yeah, and I'm trying to give people the benefit of the doubt on this one too, because
yeah,
fine, you know, if you want to claim it can't be seen and there's no fingerprint, fine, but. You know, you would have avoided a lot of problems by just saying, you know, I can't update you because you've been changed. And this, you're going to be at 1.0.2 forever. And someday you may want to join us because we've got all these cool new features. Because what it looks like is they knew it was going to happen and they released it anyway. And to me, that's unethical.
It is unethical. Yeah, and it will likely be, if enough noise is made about this, if enough problems come of this, I could very easily see it being an issue of government regulation, of Apple being ordered to fix this. I mean, because the notion of them putting something out that they knew would brick X amount of devices it's really unconscionable. Even while I have no sympathy for the people who had their iPhones bricked, none. That doesn't mean that it's right for Apple to have done it. I've got no sympathy for the negative press that Apple's getting for this either. And if that seems like some kind of contradiction, I don't see it as one. I mean, I just, you know, if you unlocked your phone and it got bricked, well, I'm really sorry, ha ha ha. But
yeah,
Apple should not have done it.
Yeah, no, I understand where that seems like a strange contradiction, but I didn't update my phone. I still have 1.0.2, and I'm going to keep it that way until I have a reason not to, or at least I can put third-party apps on it because that's what I like it for.
Right.
But I do agree that Apple's warning was, you know, you didn't have to read between the lines too much to see this could be a problem. At least wait. You know, wait a day, let some other sucker do it, and then find out, oh, boy, this isn't such a good idea.
But look at us. We're actually focusing on this on the same issue instead
well,
of looking at this overall message.
That's we fine. Are. We are.
You know, I went ahead and did the 1.1 update, even though I'd already installed third-party apps on my iPhone, because I wanted to be able to test things like the Wi-Fi store and just be able to give our readers a first-hand experience about what's going on with this new update. And as cool as the Wi-Fi store is, I'm really missing those applications that I can't use anymore.
I like the double tap though.
The double tap thing is really cool. There are some really nice additions to that update, and it's it's unfortunate that the good things that are in that update are being overshadowed by the relocking out of applications, the bricking, and yeah, it's just an unfortunate thing all the way around.
Well, I think it is, and a lot of the criticism I hear is from people who've never used third-party apps on their iPhone, and they don't understand how useful that it really is. I love the iPhone as it is; it does a lot of cool stuff, but some of these third-party apps are just amazing.
Having an IM
client on there is just killer.
Yeah, that is killer. And if you consider the fact that all these cool apps have been made without any support from Apple, just think about what could happen if Apple would actually release an SDK and let us do with this thing that we want. And I said last week in the show, Chris, that that I feel that Apple should truly embrace the iPhone as a platform instead of just a phone.
Well, they may be doing that, and I hope that they will. I hope that this is – and with a lot of these things where I sort of have been carping about Apple, you know, they don't tell you anything. They tell you nothing about their future plans. That's no secret to anybody. And it may be that they have this wonderful SDK plan and all these cool things, and 6 months from now we're all going to say, oh, that's what they were going to do. Okay, you're right. Apple – you were right. I was wrong. I'm sorry. I just didn't know. And I hope that's the case. And I hope it's not the case, as Ars Technica is saying, that Apple's going to continue pursuing this web interface for the phone, and they're not going to open the thing other than to web applications, because it's silly. I've used the new applications that I put in with third parties, and they're so useful and they're so wonderful. I don't want to be tied to the web. Give me a real app.
Yep. You know, I'm trying to think positive about all of this. And since the iPhone was supposed to come out after Leopard shipped, but it came out before, what I'm hoping is that a lot of these things that people are going, give this feature to me or give it back to me, I'm hoping that these things are going to start showing up after Leopard comes out, because what I'm hoping is that the iPod or iPhone is actually hobbled because it needs functionality in Leopard that we won't have until sometime in October.
I think that you're going to be sort of disappointed.
I know.
But I've seen that out there too. You know, it's like, no, the reason it's not happening. So I do see some grasping at straw. And I'm not characterizing your comment that way, but people are. With Apple, it's always about looking at the tea leaves and saying, okay, well, there's this little hint here. And really, that's what my piece is about, going back to the theme. It's all about the tea leaves. I see these little things happening here, and some are bigger little things than littler little things. But still, to me, that's a pattern. It's like, okay, well, I'm not sure I like this.
Let's get back to this the big thread here, the true story arc, and that is whether or not Apple is becoming arrogant and whether or not that could be a problem. Could there be a backlash against Apple as a corporation from customers that are suddenly fed up with not getting some obvious functionality in the touch, or not being able to do what they want from the iPhone, or from Apple not going to the next big thing in terms of input devices, which is a reference back to the mice.
You know, Brian, I'm going to probably piss off several people, but I feel that Apple is not so much going back to arrogance, but they've always had a certain level of arrogance, and sometimes it's a little bit higher, sometimes a little bit lower. And then we have consumers and the general public that have a certain level of tolerance for Apple's arrogance. And right now we're hitting a point where the arrogance is a little bit higher than normal, and the consumer tolerance is a little bit lower.
Well, before I let Chris jump in, which is what I should be doing right now, is letting Chris jump in, I'll say that it's okay for Apple to have a certain amount of arrogance. I mean, every other company would be scared to death of releasing a phone that hadn't been designed by committee. You know, every other company out there would be afraid of releasing, even iMovie. Take iMovie being a mistake or not being a mistake. Every other company would have been afraid to do that. And you know, the there are some good things that come out of Apple because of their arrogance. It's again,
for sure,
it's when it steps over that line. Chris?
Yes, I agree with you. I think it is nice to have the big boss there, and I love fake Steve Jobs, so I'm going to refer to him again. But he just he had an article that commented on this, and actually he linked to my article, and you know, people took advantage of that link in order to just slam me from one end of the internet to the other. But it was a brilliant article because it was Steve Jobs supposedly responding to this, and he said, "So you think I'm arrogant? Well, you know, F you, stupid, you know." And and so it works on so many levels, because on the one hand, it's just like, look, this guy's a, you know, a genius. He does amazing stuff. But, you know, the joke is, yeah, I am arrogant. See, I'm so arrogant because you're stupid and I'm smart, and this is how arrogant I am. And, you know, to couch it as like, did Michelangelo let people comment on his David or muck with it? No, it was perfect. And so, you know, when you sort of cartoon Jobs that way and think that he believes that his creations are perfect and therefore you should not be allowed to touch them, that's when you sort of get that icky feeling like, look, I know you're smarter than I am. I know you know better than I do. However, you're Apple. I'm accustomed to taking possession of my Apple stuff.
As long as you don't use it as a ringtone.
That's right. Right. And configuring it the way I want to. I'm a Mac user. You know, when I sit down at somebody's Mac, I have no idea how to use it because it's been configured to their preferences. Apple has given me another device, and so I'm trained this way. I've got an Apple application. Oh, I can install third-party apps? Great. I'm going to do that. Can I unlock it? Well, I guess I can. Okay, so I'll do that too. I don't expect Apple then to come back and then break my thing, because I've violated their beautiful piece of work. I own it. That's my piece of property. I know I'm going against Apple's terms of service.
It was Steve Jobs that said that you know, the only real problem with making an operating system is the need for third party developers. And it's not an exact quote, but it's a very close paraphrase.
Well, yeah, and we are seeing that Apple's getting more into the software business.
I'm sorry, folks, that goes back like probably, you know, a decade and a half. Just to be fair.
And he hasn't changed an iota since then. But Apple is getting into the software business, too. So increasingly you're finding, you know, you use Aperture, don't use this Adobe product, or use Final Cut, don't use this other product, and use this and this and this. And so when Apple sort of feels like, we're giving you everything you need, you don't need to go outside here, then third parties become less important to them. And you know, for the platform to grow and flourish, it needs third parties. Apple, yes, they're geniuses. I bow there every morning and say, you are wonderful, Apple. You do wonderful work. But everybody can use a little assistance, even Apple. And I hate to think that they're shunning third parties or making it difficult for them because they think they know best.
Well, I think that's actually probably – I think – In at the end of the day, that's exactly what's happened with this iPhone thing. It's probably a good place to shut off this conversation, but I think that I think that's exactly the case. Apple knows best. Think differently, Steve's way. Jeff?
I'm sorry, I just got really sad about the whole thing. Man.
It's okay. They're going to continue to make cool stuff that we're still going to love, and you know, that's the thing, is if you if you step out of line for a minute and say, I have a concern here about what's going on, it doesn't mean that you hate Apple or that you never think they're going to do a cool thing again. They're always going to do cool stuff. It's just in their DNA to do cool stuff. But, you know, it's okay, too, to step out of line every so often and look around.
Here. All right. Well, we've been talking with Chris Breen, who is the senior editor for Macworld, or is it for Mac Publishing?
Specifically for Mac Publishing, yeah.
You're a senior editor for Mac Publishing LLC.
No, actually, I'm a senior editor for Macworld. I'm also a senior editor for PlaylistMag.com, and I'm just all-around guy for Mac Publishing LLC, although I don't have a business card that says that.
You should. You should have a business card that says that. But we very much appreciate your time. I've been a big fan of your writing for probably since before Steve Jobs made that comment about hating to have third-party developers.
Well, right back at you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Don't forget about Chris's incredible talent as a musician.
That is. Oh, actually, folks, this boy can play keyboards. He just freaks me out every time. He's so freaking good.
Well, thanks. That's very nice.
It's true.
To say. Thank you.
And doesn't this seem like it's a great time to pretend that we're going to continue on, but then actually cut it?
That sounds like a brilliant idea, too. Isn't technology amazing? Okay, great. now that we've finally gotten rid of Chris, how about if we move on to something else?
Boy, it sucks having to pretend to be nice to that guy.
Oh, boy, howdy.
Actually, just so everyone knows, Chris is the best. But we are running late, so let's jump right ahead to the Zune, and let me get the first jab in. The Zune would, in fact, be a great iPod killer if it was 2005.
You know, we could pretty much wrap it up right there if we wanted to.
Yeah, we could. It's definitely improvement in the product line, but, I mean, they're just not. I mean, the iPod Touch is so far ahead of the Zune line, and the rest of the iPod line is just still ahead of what the Zune line is doing.
You know, when I look at the Zune, I see a product line where it's obvious people are really putting a lot of work into it because, well, you can't make it if you don't put a lot of work into it. But I'm also seeing that we're looking at a company that is, like, completely out of touch with consumers when it comes to portable music.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a couple.
You're speechless, aren't you?
I am speechless again. I know that doesn't happen very often, but this is a ridiculous assertion for me to make. Let's just be clear. A ridiculous assertion for me to make.
Okay, I'm sitting down.
My guess is that there are more music lovers, more music fans at Apple than at Microsoft. I know the company is just, again, taking the Mac business unit out of it because those guys are Mac. They're Mac people. Taking them out of it, you know, just Microsoft doesn't have any soul. It's a white bread company. A little Wonder Bread and Miracle Whip. Here you go. Here's a sandwich.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to me, that just doesn't go along with being music fanatics. Now, I am sure that there are some great music fans that working on the Zune, working in the music department. You know, I'm sure that they're there. But I bet you there's more at Apple.
You know, that's probably a pretty safe bet. And if you look at the way the products are designed, the iPod line and then the Zune line, with the iPod, even though, you know, we know Apple is doing some things we don't like with controlling the product, by and large, we're looking at products where they're trying to make something that really does what everyone wants as elegantly as possible.
It's largely the product that they want to use.
Right.
That's part of what always sets Apple products.
Right. But then when you look at,
they're not trying to, they're not designing by committee. They're making products that they want to use.
Sure.
The people, the team that's working on whatever product it is.
Sure.
Or at the very least, a product that Steve wants to use.
Now, when you look at the other side of that, then you have the Zune, where the philosophy seems to be more along the lines of make it good enough.
Yeah, designed by committee. That's part of what drags Microsoft down all the time, at least in my opinion. But anyway, I just, bottom line, we got to cut and move on here. But the bottom line, I don't think the Zune is going to do all that much better than the previous Zune did.
No, I don't think it is. And with that, let's see how close we can stay to our self-imposed time limit by jumping into the lawsuit.
What? Oh, my. What did I miss the constitutional clause to a guarantee of profits for reselling a used product?
Actually, my speculation is that she's confusing the Ferengi. What is it? Rules of acquisition. She's confusing the Ferengi rules of acquisition with the United States Constitution.
That must be it. I tell you what, man. This is what? It leaves me speechless.
You know,
how many things leave me speechless? I'm like the noisiest guy outside of Mike the Mouth Mattisau, who's a poker player, by the way. But they can't. She's suing because people can't resell their iPhones for the same profit. I don't even get. What does that even mean, Jeff? Help me out here because this is driving me nuts. What the hell? What the F word does that even mean?
I have absolutely no idea. I mean, when I read this originally, when I was looking at the information about the case, I hit that point and I just stopped. And I had this incredible pregnant pause, mostly for effect, of course, but this incredible pregnant pause where I'm just sitting there looking at that going, I've misread this. And so I went back and read it again. I went, I'm misreading this. I read it again and I went, nope, I'm not misreading this. What the hell is this?
All right. There may be some arcane aspect of the New York the legal code that gives the suit a rat's ass chance of not being tossed out in a preliminary hearing, but I would be surprised.
It probably also involves other arcane laws like public humiliation and a stockade and being drawn and quartered. I don't know. I mean, I look at this and I'm going, what are these people smoking?
What are they smoking? Man, you know what? I'm sorry that I paid $200 more than other people paid for their iPhone. I'm really sorry that I paid that much, but poor little me, I don't care. I got 2 months of use of the iPhone before other people did. It's a great device. I got 2 months of use out of it.
But Brian,
of course the price. Who didn't know that the price was going to drop? Of course the price was going to drop. Who cares?
Well, yeah, I know the price is going to drop, but Brian, you can't make the same profit on yours now.
Ah, I'm suing. All right, let's just move on before I get into a tizzy Bungie. Hooray!
You know, I'm actually really happy that Bungie is spinning off again, even though it's not likely that there's as many hardcore Mac developers in the group now as there was when the company was snarfed up by Microsoft.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know how. I don't know what I don't know what the folks are in the game, in the company anymore. I know that some key people have already left. Maybe actually it'd be great if they ended up coming back. Alex Seropian left a few years ago. I'd be delighted if he came back.
Yeah, that'd be cool. But you know, even with the knowledge
is the TMO jet taking off?
I'm sorry, what? Oh yeah,
the TMO jet taking off?
Yeah, actually, Dave Hamilton had to take off for another meeting, and so he's in the TMO jet heading back out, I think, to Cupertino for some secret meeting.
I'm sure that is, or is that the TMO dragster?
No.
All right, so we're digressing. We're digressing. Bungie.
We are. Okay, so one of the things about this whole Bungie breakoff thing that has me excited, not just because now they can do whatever they want, but because we know that these guys can really write cool games. So having them off on their own where they can pursue what they want without having to worry about the corporate part of you know, Microsoft being directly involved in what they do, they now have a lot more freedom in the games they make. So I'm very excited about that.
Well, I don't think even for a second that Microsoft was messing with them on game content. I think that Microsoft let them alone on that. The biggest impact that Microsoft had was simply making their titles be Xbox titles. And and let's be honest, all the Mac users who are excited about this, it's because we're hoping these guys are going to make cool Mac games again.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, we hope that they're going to be like Blizzard and they're going to go back to releasing, Myth was, Marathon was Mac only. Marathon 2 was ported over to Windows. I don't think it sold very well on the Windows side. Myth ended up being a simultaneous Mac and PC release. And, you know, we're hoping that's going to come back, that we're going to get some great kick-butt Bungie games because, you know, they make just killer games.
They do. And they really set the trend. I mean, when they came out with Marathon, they set a bar and a style that other people have been following ever since.
Marathon to Doom, those were the ones that were out at the same time, and Marathon was just an infinitely better game.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, be that as it may, the reality is that Bungie might end up staying with consoles because there's a lot of money to be made for console development. Quite frankly, developing for consoles is easier because, you know, they're largely closed platforms. You don't have to worry about updates and things like that. Once you release the game, it's pretty much done. There's a lot of reasons why game developers are all excited about consoles. Now, from my perspective, I don't want to play a first-person shooter or even a third-person shooter on a console. I hate using console controllers for games like that. I know that there's clearly tens and tens and tens, maybe even hundreds of millions of people that do like that because Halo was such a big success.
Right.
But yeah, I like playing my games like that with a mouse and keyboard. And I know that there are lots of folks who feel the same way.
You know, I always did the mouse and keyboard thing, but that's because that's what was available to us at the time. I did at one point go out and buy, remember Gravis used to make all those little ADB port game pads and stuff? Mm-hmm. I went out and bought one so that I could play Marathon. And I used it for about 2 or 3 days and unplugged it. and went back to my keyboard and mouse. So I guess I'm in the same camp as you.
Well, and there just are a lot of folks that are like that. But we have we don't yet know what Bungie's plans are. We don't yet know what their what kind of games they're going to be releasing. We don't know if they're going to be doing Mac development. We can only hope, and I do hope. So let's hope.
I'm hoping right there with you.
All right, great. Let's move on to the request and actually the listener comment line.
Well, this week's listener comment is from Stephen W. Carson, who wrote in about Amazon's new MP3 music service, which we covered in last week's podcast. And Mr. Carson said, quote, re-Amazon MP3, Universal has DRM-free music on Amazon, but not in the iTunes store. Why? They got Apple's message about DRM-free music, but didn't feel happy about it. So they take it out on the messenger. Bastards. Unquote.
Yeah, well... I agree with you, Stephen. I think that I think there's a lot of spite going on right now with Universal, with NBC, with a lot of the labels. Everyone's pissed off that Apple is so successful. Everyone's pissed off about having to deal with Apple on their terms, and that's exactly what's happening. I think that I think you're right, buddy.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think that Universal is trying to give Apple a little spank on the a spank on the wrist.
Yep. And, you know, a lot of good it's going to do them. They're just they're fools for not taking advantage of the iTunes Plus format. It's the price increase that they always wanted. Screw them all. Screw the label. Screw the TV studio. Screw them all.
You know, Brian, you should start your own band and write music. All right. Well, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And don't forget, we're getting a new phone number. We'll let you know what that is as soon as we have it. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com, and we apologize for running over this week's show.